Welcome to Milwaukee Momcast, a podcast dedicated to real stories for real parents. Produced by Milwaukee Mom, we'll tackle a variety of topics in a way we hope will make you laugh, make you think, and remind you that this whole being a parent thing can be a little wild, but at least we're in it together. So, reheat your coffee, grab the headphones, and get comfy while we chat all things motherhood with a Midwest twist. Hello, friends. We have a fantastic episode in store for you today. Our guest today is Keisha Shanks, who is the woman, the superhero behind Infinite Family Solutions, based here in the Milwaukee area. In this episode, we talk about infant mental health, which is something that you're going to learn a lot more about today. We're also going to really dig into some of the racial disparities in maternal and infant care, and even talk about some of the startling statistics when it comes to mental and infant mortality rates and how they compare across race lines. We're going to really dig deep into a lot of these conversations, well, as best we can in one podcast. As you can imagine, this is a huge topic that could be discussed at length and should be discussed. But for today's episode, I invite you to get comfortable and get ready for this conversation, which is so important, and we invite you to join us in it. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Milwaukee Momcast. I am incredibly thrilled because joining us in the studio today is a guest that I cannot wait for you all to get to meet. Today, we are joined by Keisha Shanks, and I just want to jump right in and let you tell everybody who you are, what you do, because you're going to be able to do a much better job of it than I am. And it's really an incredible, incredible story.
Probably not.
Oh, I highly doubt that.
Just because it's so awkward talking about myself.
You're not alone in that. It's okay.
I am Keisha Shanks. I have an agency called Infinite Family Solutions. What I do with that agency is I work with pregnant women and new moms. So anyone that have recently given birth, it doesn't matter if it's their first child or their 12th. And I work with them on all sorts of life things, social, emotional things, pregnancy related concerns or information. So kind of like a mom coach.
Ooh, I love that. I love putting it that way.
The mommy mentor, maybe.
Yeah. Ooh, yes. I like that too. I like the alliteration on that one.
Yeah, so.
New business cards.
Right.
I like it.
So yeah, I work with them throughout pregnancy up until their babies are 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So helping them with things, pregnancy concerns, like teaching them about development, what's happening with the baby in utero, how what's going on with them and in their environment is impacting baby in utero, that sort of thing. Once the baby is here, I help them with breastfeeding. We scheduling sleep schedules, feeding schedules, parenting, teaching them about the baby's development and wow. What behaviors to expect at certain times, how the baby is communicating.
This sounds like four full-time jobs simultaneously.
It's a lot. Like, as I'm running through it, I'm thinking about all of the things that I do. You don't think about it when you're doing it, but now that I'm forced to talk about it, it's like, wait a minute.
That's a lot.
And then there's this. And then there's it. My brain is like,
yeah.
It's a lot, but I love it.
I imagine. Yeah.
I love it. I get to play with babies all day, usually.
There are worse jobs.
Yeah, there are worse jobs. Sometimes it's not so pleasant.
Yeah.
A lot of the families that I work with, they are economically distressed, I will say. So a lot of times they just don't have a lot of, you know, basic resources that you and I may have. And so that gets to be a little bit challenging and at times heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of families that have experienced trauma and some of the more extreme trauma, like community violence, domestic violence, things like that, separations and abuse, sexual abuse, things like that. So it gets to be heart-wrenching at times.
Yeah.
It gets to be very heavy at times. But for the most part, mm-hmm. overall, it's very rewarding.
I love
the work that I do and the impact that I have on families.
And how long has Infinite Family Solutions just been around?
I incorporated back in 2011. So it wasn't until maybe like 2013 that I really started to get into it.
Yeah.
And once I completed my infant mental health capstone at UW-Madison, that was in 2015. And then things like really started picking up.
And how many people are part of the team that help you do that enormous list of things that you just listed off?
Right now, it's just myself mostly.
No way.
Yeah, it's myself mostly. I'm in the process of getting people onboarded and getting them trained in doing this work.
Keisha, that's so much.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. Wow. I'm a one-woman show. For right now, but I'm looking to increase capacity with people that may already be doing similar work, but getting them the infant mental health training and getting them the child development training that they need so that they, and the mental health training and support also, because even, you know, as a provider, you deal with so many personal things.
Yes, especially you're dealing with those, you know, trauma related care. I mean,
Sometimes it's triggering, you know?
Oh, very much so.
So just helping you to process and unpack that. So I want to make sure that I have all of the right things in place to support anyone that's a part of my family.
Definitely.
And supporting family. So.
And you said that's the service side. And what's the other side?
That's the service side. So the other side is the consultant side. Mm-hmm. So I'm a public health consultant, and I specialize in infant mental health.
Which we're going to dig more into momentarily.
So with that, I do a lot of public speaking, conferences, workshops, professional development, training. So organizations bring me in to do professional trainings for their staff.
Yeah.
A lot of times lately, it's been mostly around racism, implicit bias, and how those things impact service delivery. So that's the consultancy side of things. I've been published in a couple of local magazines and journals, newspapers, and things like that. So I write. I have a lot of stuff going on as I'm sitting here like after this. I'm like, wait a minute.
Listen, I'm not very good at math.
How do I do this?
I've never been very good at math. But I'm over here going, she has the same 24 hours in the day as I do. How much sleep is she probably getting? My goodness. I mean, that's a lot to take on. But my goodness, there's so much to tackle, literally just as you're saying that out of you know, in that whole list. So needless to say, you have a full schedule. And so I'm very grateful that you were able to get in to speak with us today, because
I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
I'm so thrilled. So as we go into this conversation, my goal is to do a lot of listening, and I want to do a lot of, asking of questions, but for the most part, sitting back and really listening to Keisha educate both myself and our listeners, and to really dig into some of these rather startling issues and some of these, and this is just really important for moms, not only in the Milwaukee area, but in general, to be talking about, be aware of, and just understanding. So if it's okay with you, let's dive in.
All right.
Awesome.
Let's do it.
Okay. To kick things off, we want to really just establish the underlying problem that is on the table for the conversation today. Now, to say the problem with a capital P is going to be what, like 40, 50 podcasts. I mean, that's far too large of a bite to take for just today. So what we're going to dive into is based on maternal and infant health, specifically in the Milwaukee area, but also in general. And I have going to include this in the show notes, but according to the United States CDC, the United States has the worst maternal mortality rate among all developed countries. And we could literally stop at that sentence right there and recognize that that's a massive problem.
Yes.
But if we keep reading, unfortunately, the news kind of gets worse. It says, and the risk of pregnancy-related deaths is 3 to 4 times higher for Black women than for white women, the majority of which are fully preventable
and can happen up to a year after a person gives birth. Mm-hmm. Now, before we even dial in to the Milwaukee area, I want to pause there. Talk to me about this. Talk to me about how there's so many things going on here. Not only 3 to 4 times higher for Black women than white women, but the fact that the CDC points out the majority of these are fully preventable and can happen up to a year after a person gives birth. What do you make of those statistics?
It's very disheartening, you know, especially given the fact that the United States has the worst maternal and infant mortality rate amongst Black children than anywhere in the world. So we're talking, you know, underdeveloped countries, countries that don't have, you know, access to fresh water,
yeah,
things of that nature.
It just feels so counterintuitive.
It does. And you think, you know, we're the United States. We have this really advanced medical system. Mm-hmm. Our healthcare is sublime. Like it should not be this way.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that a lot of harm comes to people here in the United States, especially to Black women. Mm. And a lot of that harm is, you know, in the midst of various systems, healthcare system in particular. Mm. And like even here in Milwaukee, and we're not talking about the state of Wisconsin, just right. In the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee has the highest maternal and infant mortality rate in the entire country. Milwaukee.
Wow.
And when you look at Milwaukee, when you look at the numbers,
yeah,
and you look at the statistically speaking for African Americans, for Black people in Milwaukee, you know, the unemployment is the highest. Mm-hmm. Black male incarceration is the highest. Food insecurities are the highest. Poverty is the highest. Lack of education is the highest. So all of these other social factors,
yeah,
that, you know, contribute to these numbers. And then, you know, the biggest thing that we never talk about is the fact that Milwaukee is arguably the most hyper segregated city,
yes,
in the country as, yeah, well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have a lot of opportunities that, you know, are just not afforded to a certain demographic of people.
Yeah. And you mentioned those numbers, and we'll put this article in the show notes as well. But according to this piece from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that was published in March of 2019, they're quoted as saying, according to the most recent data, the average infant mortality rate in Wisconsin is 4.8 per 1,000 white infants, compared to 14.2 for African-American infants. And the maternal mortality rate in Wisconsin is 5 times higher for Black women than for white women. And that's the state. But Milwaukee is almost the shining star of this,
yes,
nasty, of this dismal statistic.
Yeah. I mean, in Milwaukee, there's so much disparity in the city. And I really hate to say that, because it gives the impression that, you know, people that are not familiar with the city and that don't know the city or know many people from the city would, mm-hmm, think that that's all there is in Milwaukee, and yeah, it's not.
Right.
Even within the Black community, that it's not. But the pressure in the air of racism in Milwaukee is very, very thick.
Can you just talk more about that and kind of describe what you mean?
It's very known. It's, mm-hmm, a quiet knownness, if, yeah, that's,
no, that makes,
if that's
sense,
even a word, yeah, that
it is now.
Everyone is not welcome everywhere. Systemically, there are things that keep you out. Like right now, for example, we look at the educational system. Mm-hmm. So the Chapter 220 program has been completely dissolved.
What was that?
So that was a program that allowed people from one school district to attend school in another district.
Okay.
So if you lived in Milwaukee, you could go to a school in Wauwatosa, or you could go to a school in Brookfield.
Is that the open enrollment, but like different, or is that the same thing?
It's kind of like open enrollment, but the open enrollment is more of a lottery.
Okay, I gotcha.
Whereas Chapter 220 is, you know, they had so many seats that they had to have available.
I gotcha.
Whereas
okay.
now the district yep. decides, okay, well, we'll allow these three seats for this grade. And,
I
you
see.
Know,
okay.
what have you. And with 220,
yep.
Siblings were able to be grandfathered in, and that's not the case with open enrollment.
Okay.
And then with 220 also came busing. You know, you had some kids that were bused into Milwaukee, but majority of them were being bused out.
Right.
So that changed. So now if you're in it, you're in it. You're grandfathered in.
Gotcha. But there's no new kids that are able
to come in. But if you're not, then that's it.
So what's been the impact then of that in that last year and a half that you've seen?
Within Milwaukee, you have the Milwaukee public school system, mm-hmm. and then you have the charter schools and yep. choice schools and things like that. So, you know, in terms of funding, the money doesn't follow the kid. It follows where they are on enrollment day or attendance day.
Okay.
So if they are, if they're at a charter school, for example, mm-hmm. the money that the district would pay to educate that school goes to that charter school.
Mm-hmm.
Now they may end up back at a public school, you know,
yeah.
a week later,
uh-huh.
but the money doesn't come back to the public school.
I see.
So a lot of the okay. schools are underfunded because the funds are going elsewhere, but the kids are,
you know,
staying there in the district.
Okay.
And when we think about infant mortality and we think about maternal mortality,
yes.
we tend to think about it from a healthcare lens. We think about it, you know, well, you know, go to the doctor. That's fine. And those things could not be further from the truth.
Just take care of yourself. This is easy.
Yeah. You know, go to your, make sure you're attending your doctor's appointments and making sure you're eating fruits and vegetables. Well, for some families, that's hard to do. If you don't have an automobile, chances are you don't live near a grocery store that supplies, that has, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. You're at the mercy of a corner market. You know, they have chips.
They have what they have. Yeah.
And maybe some frozen foods and things like that.
Yeah.
Chips, candy, you know, ramen noodles.
Oh, those things are the worst.
They are horrible. I saw a box of like, it was like 25 packs for a dollar.
Ugh.
But, you know, if you don't have much money.
Ugh, yeah.
that's what you feed your kids. Ugh. So, but, you know, if you're, you know, your income suppressed, you know, that's,
right.
that's
yeah.
ideal.
Right.
So you have malnourishment happening. Mm-hmm. You have poor education. Housing inequality is very, very big in the city.
Yeah.
It's something that I've even been a lot more vocal about in the recent months just because of things that I've experienced with my families, you know, poverty and things like that. People feel like poor people don't deserve to have nice things, you know, and I'm not talking, I'm not expecting granite countertops and rental properties and things like that. But, you know, I don't know, basic things like not having mold on the walls.
For example. Yeah.
For example,
that would be
you know,
nice.
Having plumbing that isn't leaking and, you know, having your homes that are insulated, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so that you, you know, can control your temperature because it gets kind of cold here.
Yeah, it gets a little chilly
here.
It gets
a little chilly.
And so, you know, increasing heating costs and things like that. So, you know, so many families are having a hard time meeting their basic needs.
Yeah.
And it's a systemic thing. And, you know, when you're in a place of privilege or you don't necessarily have to worry about those things, the first thing that says, well, you know, get a job and do something different. But it's not always that easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess this is probably a 40 to 50 hour conversation if we keep going down all of these paths that you keep referring to, because, you know, it seems like everything is just tied to the next thing, which is tied to the next thing, which is tied to the next thing. So when it comes to dialing in on these stats for maternal health and babies, I want to come back to kind of what you were talking about with malnutrition and these basic needs being met. Because if we're literally talking about a mom, like a pregnant mother, mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a foregone conclusion for some that like, oh, you just take your prenatal and you eat good and baby's going to be fine. But
yeah,
it's not that easy. Yeah.
And let me be very clear when I say that this isn't an issue that's just affecting poor Black women. It's affecting affluent Black women as well. I have a friend that is married, has two master's degrees.
Two. Wow.
Has two master's degrees. Speaking of a lot of work. And is currently working on a doctorate. Accomplished business owner.
Yeah.
Very, very stable.
Mm-hmm.
She has no problems meeting. She doesn't have food insecurity, housing insecurity, things like that. She's had five stillbirths.
Five?
Five.
Wow.
It's racism. Racism is the issue in all of this, because it creates all of these other systemic things that have an impact on pregnancy outcomes. It's not just about, you know, eating healthy and going to the doctor and exercising. There's a lot of disparities, health disparities, as a result in the African American community. Heart disease is exceptionally high in the Black community. Diabetes is exceptionally high in the Black community. Ovarian cancers are high. Fibroids, you know, Black women are, I want to say, 3 to 4 more times more likely to have fibroids than white women.
What are fibroids again?
They're little tumors in your uterus. They're not cancerous.
They're like the little benign kind of.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're benign tumors that grow. They're growths. So, but they impact fertility.
Got it.
So if you have fibroids, if you have a lot of fibroids, like I know people that have had fibroids removed from their uterus that, you know, were like the size of an orange.
Oh my goodness.
And I had my own issue with fibroids 2 years ago.
Wow.
You know, while we're talking about this, you know, people are probably listening and wondering, well, racism, how does that happen? Well, it's simple things such as going to the doctor.
Okay.
They say, go to the doctor. You go to the doctor. But what happens when, you know, your concerns by your doctor are dismissed? And the likelihood of your concerns being dismissed and you just not being, your concerns not being valued or being heard are a lot higher when you are a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in doctor's offices and I've, as a patient and as an advocate for someone else.
Yeah.
And have not had my concerns heard.
Just kind of dismissed or like just dismissed, talked away
and things like that. And I'll share briefly a personal story of mine.
Yeah.
So a couple years ago, I was having, you know, very heavy periods and they were painful. I've never been one to have cramps at any point in my life. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate, I guess, in that. So I never had cramps. I never had heavy bleeding, but all of a sudden I was having very heavy bleeding and I was cramping.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my doctor, who was an older white man, you know, what I was experiencing. And he says, well, you need to go on birth control. Well, I didn't really want to take birth control, but he said that that would help remedy some of my symptoms.
Okay.
And it made it worse.
Oh, no.
And throughout that time that I was having all these issues, I'm telling him the things that I'm experiencing. He comes back to me and he says, well, you know, they did studies on this and this is normal. This is normal. The studies show. And I said, well, I understand that the studies show that this is normal. But for me, this is not for my body.
I know my body and this is normal.
This is not normal. And he was very, very reluctant to give me any type of testing or to do any diagnostic testing or anything to see what the problem may have been. He didn't want to give me an ultrasound, nothing. And after, you know, having these heavy, painful periods, and what the straw that broke my back was, I had gone to Great America with a friend and we were standing in line. And just before we got in line to get on this ride, I had changed, you know, put on a new menstrual pad. And I know this is probably like TMI.
No, it's fine. It's a mom cast. It's fine. So, it's for moms.
So literally.
We've all been there. It's fine.
Literally just before I go on this ride, I change my sanitary napkin. And when I'm in line, I just feel blood gushing everywhere.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, I've got to get out of line because something isn't right.
Yeah.
I got to the bathroom and I had soaked through all of my clothes. And I had on one of the big super duper, the ones the front to back.
The one that's like a lady diaper, basically.
Yeah. I had on one of those because I knew.
And you were at Great America.
And I was at Great America and I was mortified.
That just sends you right back to middle school, that kind of stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh, I'm so embarrassed.
And but quite on top honestly, of it, even then, like I've had never experienced that.
Yeah. So now you're like, something is really wrong.
So like I got a shirt to wrap around my waist and we left. Like, yeah. And we hadn't even been there long. That was the first ride that we were in line for. And I was so embarrassed and I felt so bad. And thankfully my friend was super understanding.
Yeah.
But that was like the turning point for me. And I said, you know, I went to the doctor and again, he just completely dismissed all of my concerns, telling me that this was normal and that, you know, sometimes it happens, you know, heavy periods. He's like, well, you know, you're getting older. So heavy periods are not common, are not that uncommon, you know, with women in your age. And I said, yeah, this isn't my normal. So I went online and found another doctor, a woman that was younger and, you know, fresher out of medical school and went and got an appointment with her. Yeah. And within 45 days of my first appointment, I had surgery to have fibroids removed.
Oh my goodness.
And she was very, you know, she was upset that I had the experience that I had. And she was very concerned. She was very personable.
Yeah.
She was very curious because she's like, yeah, that
how on earth did this go this long?
That would drive me nuts. So let's get you some tests and see what's going on.
And what was the test that finally showed what the actual problem was?
I want to say it was a CT scan. And afterwards she gave me a picture of like what the inside of my uterus looked like. And
she
showed me like what she removed. Yeah, it's very unsettling. But when you look at the amount of chronic stress that Black women are under, you know, dealing with racism, because literally, you know, me being who I am and all of the things that I'm involved in and all of the spaces that I'm in, like I encounter racism every single day, every single day. So there's that. And then there's, you know, historical, you know, diet, things like that. A soul food diet is not the healthiest thing to eat. I mean, the food,
you're breaking some hearts right now.
The food is delicious, don't get me wrong, it's delicious, but it's not the healthiest thing to eat. But it, you know, those things are customs and culture that came from slavery. We pretty much had to make a meal out of entrails. so we did and it's those are things that have passed on with us and has, you know, been passed along through the generations. And so that's what we eat, but that's that high sodium, high fat. And that's why, you know, you have high blood pressure, heart disease, and things like that.
The diabetes, like you mentioned.
And the diabetes in the African-American community, being under chronic stress. Stress is
that's a big deal.
Very big thing. And it's something that, you know, trauma and things, you know, epigenetically, those are things that literally transform your DNA.
Absolutely.
So you're, you know, we are a species where we adapt to our conditions over time.
Yeah.
So think about the trauma and things that our ancestors endured and how that has altered us genetically.
Yeah. Literally passing it down from generation to generation.
Over time. Yeah. Yeah. You know, when we look at pregnancy and childbirth, you know, some of our attitudes to breastfeeding. That was something, there's a lot of trauma with that in the Black community, because there was a time where Black women were not allowed to breastfeed and to nurture our children because they could literally be yanked from our arms or sold or killed right in front of our faces. So we had to disconnect. And that culture of disconnect has been handed down
and perpetuated
through generations, like, oh, put that baby down because you're going to spoil it. Stop holding that baby so much. But we know now that holding a baby, you know, especially in infancy, they small kids from infants on up to 5 years old, they need connection.
Yeah.
They need a lot of attention. We know that because that alters their brain.
Yeah, because I know we hear about the benefits of that immediate skin to skin quite often.
Yeah, skin to skin and breastfeeding. It's about nutrition, but it's also about their social and emotional development.
Yeah,
it's about creating trust. It's about establishing love and what that feels like and what that looks like. And those things create resilient and happy kids.
Yeah. And when you're trying to create these bonds of trust and love and nurturing, and you take that and you place it into environments that have had, like you're saying, this systemic perpetuating sense of the opposite of that being kind of woven into the fabric of the family, the community for generations, it kind of comes into conflict with one another, I can imagine.
Yeah. And the thing about, I know a lot of people don't like to hear about this because there are many people that feel like, oh, well, you know, that happened so long ago, just get over it, you know? And people don't realize the impact of it, you know, the institution of it, even though it was made illegal in 1864, it continued on and it manifested itself in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Jim Crow and things like that, and segregation. And now, you know, we have mass incarceration and things like that that we're dealing with.
On just a really quick side note, I want to ask, are you familiar with the podcast 1619 that's put out by the New York Times?
No, I haven't listened to that one.
Okay. I'm going to humbly, very, very humbly, recommend it to literally everybody. So, it's produced by the New York Times as like an extension of their daily podcast, which is like a news podcast called The Daily. And, it's called 1619 based on the year that the first ship, arrived from Africa with the first group of those who would be enslaved. And it literally each episode goes into, either focusing on a particular person or even down to one episode was about how literally American music, and again, I'm using air quotes here, but you can't see me, all stems from the music that was created by slaves. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was overheard by a white performer who then took that and turned it into his like show, which then became the most popular music, because prior to that, all of the music that had been listened to up to that point came from Britain. Mm-hmm. It was English. So the first American music literally came directly out of the black community, and that every single genre since then has, you know, been reminiscent of that. Anyway, all that to say, every single episode is absolutely incredible. And when you mentioned that, it made me think of it, that I just wanted to recommend it to everybody because it's very, very well done.
No, but that's true. African-American culture or African culture has been sampled quite a bit. It has been appropriated quite a bit.
Yes.
Everything from food, the music that we listen to, and things, everything,
language,
and especially now with pop culture.
Oh yeah.
The influence from African-American community it's there, but it's always been that way. You know,
right.
You had a lot of groups, they had this really raw sound and they brought all of this emotion and, you know, they made you feel something through their music, but, you know, nobody wanted to hear anything from black people. So then, you know, white people, they emulated the sound as best they could. And, you know, they became national artists.
Big deal.
Whereas the black people that they got the music from, they were on the Chitlin' circuit. So they were underground and playing in bars and things like that. And you had a few that went mainstream, but I think about Hattie McDaniels. She won first black woman to ever win an Emmy.
Really?
And she had to come into the theater through the back door. She wasn't allowed to enter through the front. So, I mean, it's when we talk about racism, we really don't talk about its origins.
Yeah.
And kind of where it came from. And ironically, the workshops that I've been doing where I'm talking about, you know, bias and racism and things like that, I go into a lot of detail about how racism came to be, how the concept of race was even a thing.
Yeah.
where that comes from and how it's woven into everything that we are today. Every single one of us, like none of us are exempt from it. We all have internalized racism. Mm-hmm. It's just different. It looks different from my end versus mm-hmm. your end because, you know, you being a white woman, you have privilege that I don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And your privilege comes at my expense.
Yes, it does.
And that's the thing that a lot of people don't want to talk about and they don't look at, like even culturally, you know, slavery was horrific. You know, think about, just to put it into perspective, and this is definitely the Cliff's Notes version.
Very, very much so, because otherwise it would be a 12-hour podcast.
So, you know, you have a group of people that were captured on their land and packed like sardines on a ship, you know, in chains and things mm-hmm. like that, taken to a land where nobody looks like them. And the people that do look like them, they're in chains. They're being whipped, things like that. They don't speak the language. And you're being forced to abandon everything that makes you who you are. So we were not allowed to practice our religion because those were things that could get you killed. And the religion is a really big thing because, you know, mm-hmm. that's your spiritual foundation. Like, mm-hmm. that's your core. People didn't understand, you know, the Europeans, they didn't understand African spiritual practices. Mm. So it was, you know, Christianity was forced on us and things like that. And those things, you know, there's a psychology behind that. And those things impact the way that we are and how we've managed to survive.
Which comes back to your point earlier of literally the DNA being altered.
Yeah.
And passing that along to the next generation.
So now what we're seeing is a lot of things that we've done culturally in order to survive this mm-hmm. far. We're not thriving.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. When we look at infant mortality and maternal mortality, it's so much bigger than attending doctor's appointments and eating vegetables and things yeah. like that. Because, you know, there are a lot of women that I work with that, you know, throughout their pregnancy, their housing is unstable.
Yeah.
And systems aren't really set up for them to be able to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
Or much less, you know, their children.
It's a much bigger issue than just go to the doctor, take this vitamin, eat more vegetables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And chronic stress, it's very hard mm-hmm. on your body. You know, when you're under chronic stress, your cortisol levels are exceptionally high. And for those that don't know, cortisol, that's, you know, your fight or flight hormone.
Okay.
So yeah. That's, you know, think about if someone startles you
yeah.
and you get shaky, you know, your armpits might sweat a little bit and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like very anxious.
Yep.
Imagine feeling like that all the time. And the best way, the vehicle that cortisol uses to get throughout your body is sugar, glucose. So when you okay. look at, you know, diet.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we're talking about poverty and food insecurities. They're not having fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that.
Never even mind all the added sugar that's been added in by the food industry to be able to make more money.
Yes.
Add all that in.
So it's, you know, people are having, they're eating very calorie rich foods,
uh-huh.
but they're nutrient deficient.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, your ramen noodles, they're exceptionally high. There's like over 3,000 milligrams of sodium in one packet, and then you have monosodium glutamate, which is like sodium on steroids.
Really?
And what it does is it gives you the impression that you're full, but you don't stay full for long.
So then you combine all of that with elevated stress, chronic stress,
mm-hmm.
day in, day out.
Day out.
And that has this domino effect on literally everything else.
Outside of, you know, personal stress and
yeah.
just stress, you know, from working and things like that and just dealing with people.
Because people are stressful.
People are stressful. So dealing with that, you're dealing with racism. You have, you know, your housing is insecure. You might live in a neighborhood. And I know people, you know, that, again, are educated, married, yeah. have good jobs, very, you know, good people, but they live in a neighborhood that's not so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have people with PhDs living next to people that have a lot of issues, mental health issues and things like that, that are going undiagnosed and untreated and things like that. So all of those things compound and create like a petri dish, so to speak, for issues.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing in Milwaukee right now.
So when you are then going through Infinite Family Solutions and you're going into homes and you're meeting with mothers, let's dial into this concept of infant maternal health that you've brought up several times. Talk to us about, I mean, when you and I first met and you said the term infant mental health, I went like, wait,
you're like, huh?
Full stop. I'm going to need you to explain to me what that is and how that relates to everything that we've already been talking about.
Okay. So infant mental health is, really about relationships.
Yeah.
Specifically those early relationships and how they, create the foundation for, you know, children to become happy, resilient, and productive society members as adults.
Yes.
So what it does is it looks at, okay, what is the child's relationship with mom, dad, grandma, you know, anyone that has direct access to this child or is heavily involved in their day-to-day care. So who can this child rely on for their day-to-day things? Usually it's mom or dad. Sometimes it could be grandma, aunt, cousin, a sibling, depending on the dynamic of the family. So that's ultimately what infant mental health is about, looking at those relationships and how relationships and attachment really serve as a buffer. Because, you know, we all experience trauma. We all experience stress. And stress isn't a bad thing as long as it's not in excess.
Yeah.
So when I'm working with my families, I try to identify strengths within their network, whatever that may look like.
Okay.
So if they have, you know, if they have mom, you know, they live with their mom or, or grandma, or, they live with a friend or, you know, who's around and what do these relationships look like?
And this process is usually starting, when mom is still pregnant, right?
When mom is pregnant. Now, ideally, so the families that I work with, I do work with, low income families, but I do also work with families that are not low income. And I work with families, not just Black families. I work with white families. I have Hispanic families and things like that. So sometimes I do work in the planning phase. So, I have a family now that I'm working with that, they're trying to get pregnant.
Okay.
But they're also wanting to make sure that certain dynamics and things like that are in place.
Got it.
So that they want to have a healthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, so that's, infant mental health is really looking at, those things.
And you even mentioned way back at the beginning, getting infant mental health certified.
Yes. At UW Madison.
So talk to me a little bit about that. What does that look like to have a focus in that?
Real quick. When I first started doing this work, I got brought into it because, people were talking about the kids, talking about kids and how, you know, kids now, you know, they're unruly, they don't respect people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whatever. Like, it's like there's so many things for children. There's so many interventions for children, but there's really nothing for parents. There are no supports for parents. I mean, if you are lower income, you can go and get public assistance. But in terms of emotional and mental support, they're really isn't anything for parents. So who's working with parents? A lot of parents don't know how to parent, especially if they were not parented properly, or if they have, you know, breaks from their own childhood that have gone unresolved.
Trauma that they haven't dealt with.
Those things, you know, those things they pass on to their kids. And that's with everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, that's not, you know, it doesn't matter what your social or economic status is. That's with everybody.
Totally.
So nobody's working with parents. And so someone says, you know what? I think you would be really good at, you know, doing prenatal care coordination. So I was like, okay, well, let, you know, check it out. I had recently been laid off from my cushy corporate job with GE.
Okay.
And I needed to work.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and at the time, you know, my daughter was young, so that allowed me the flexibility to, you know, be at home with her mm-hmm. and still earn money. So I started doing PNCC. And it did not take me long to realize that I was completely in over my head. Not because I didn't care.
Yeah.
But I realized that with that program, the way that I was being taught it was to go, that it just wasn't what families needed.
Wasn't working. Yeah.
They didn't need resources to free things or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
They needed.
It was much bigger than that.
Yeah. There was, I'm just noticing, you know, dynamics with the kids, you know, relationships between mom and dad. And, you know, there's a lot of dysfunction and a lot of disorganized attachment. I didn't know that's what it was called then.
We got there eventually. Yep.
But, you know, then I was like, man, these people crazy. Like, this is too much.
I cannot help you.
Like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I would literally find myself in bed at night, like, on a Saturday, crying, like, I don't know if they need this, and I don't know how I can help. And my mentor actually introduced me to one of the program chairs.
Okay.
For the Infant Mental Health Capstone. And they're, you know, talking to me about my work, and they were like, you know, you should apply.
Yeah.
And I went online and I looked it up, and I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let me do this. And I applied and, you know, did well on my interviews, and they accepted me into the program. And it was a 1-year intensive program. And when I say it totally changed the trajectory of my work, it was so transformative for me as a mom. There were many times in class I was sitting there crying. I was like, oh my God, I'm such a bad mom. I remember this one time I did, you know, because I didn't
know. You rewind the tape and you start to play it back to yourself.
Yeah, you start to think about things that, you know, as you're going through different studies, you think about things from your childhood, things that you saw, like maybe with your friends. And, you know, I was one of those people because, you know, I was born to it. My parents were teenagers. Mm. When I was born, and was fatherless, essentially. You know, my dad was never around. So I was one of those kids that really didn't understand how people could lose their mind because their parents divorced.
Yeah.
So, your parents broke up, big deal. You know?
Yeah.
And I really did not understand how traumatic that can be and the impact that it has on people, especially young kids. And I went through that capstone. And immediately I thought about my own daughter because I noticed, you know, her behavior changed when her dad and I split. You know, she was very whiny. She was fussy. And when she would come home from her dad's house, she would have full out fits. And I, for the longest time, I thought she hated me, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm a bad mom. Like, what am I doing wrong? And it wasn't until I went through the capstone that it didn't dawn on me that, you know, we were together and that was all that she knew.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we split, I moved to a different residence.
Yeah.
So even though we were, you know, in a very nice home, clean home and that sort of thing, it was unfamiliar to her.
Yeah.
But when she went to her dad's, that was, you know, that was familiar to her. She was familiar with that space. She wasn't familiar with our new space.
Got it.
So at 2-3 years old, that's a big adjustment.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you don't recognize, you know, they can't say, well, you know, this is hard for me.
Excuse me, mother, this environment is unfamiliar to me.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They can't do that when they're 3.
They can't say that. So they have tantrums.
Yeah.
And it might seem like they favor one parent over the other. Mm. And they fall out. And in infant mental health, that's what infant mental health taught me.
Got it.
Taught me how to recognize behaviors and really to assess, okay, well, what's going on
right
around here? I know we talked before about babies that are in the NICU.
Yeah, yeah.
And how that is a traumatizing experience. So you have a baby in the NICU and, you know, they're in the NICU for maybe 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come home And immediately people are like, okay, great. The baby is home. We got to start sleep training, you know, feeding schedules.
Nobody told the baby that this is home.
No one told the baby this is home. And they're like, you know, well, what's wrong? The baby won't stop crying. Or sometimes they appear that they feel nothing. So they're just not responsive to anything. Like those are extremes. Those are not normal baby behaviors. Right. You know, you have a baby that doesn't cry or doesn't, you know, seem to be affected by anything that's going on around it. Those things aren't normal. But sometimes we think like, oh, you know, I've got such a good baby, just sits there in his little bouncy chair and he doesn't bother anybody, he doesn't fuss. I have to make him eat. He sleeps for 8 hours. Like, well, he's 6 weeks old. He shouldn't sleep for 8 hours. Yeah. You know, he needs to eat. You have to wake him up to eat. Mm-hmm. But just understanding those things like that,
right?
And what's normal and what
because you don't know them if nobody tells you.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you know, we think that it's one thing when it's really something else.
So why do you think it is that we haven't? Well, I say we, but I'm assuming that the majority of folks haven't heard of infant mental health before. Why do you think it is that that's something that is relatively unfamiliar in the parenting community?
You know, mental health is one of those things, it's kind of taboo. And when we talk about mental health, a lot of times we talk about mental health from the standpoint of, you know, disorders.
Okay, yeah.
So we're looking to diagnose something.
Yeah.
Whether it be depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder.
Give a label to what's wrong.
Give a label to what's wrong, rather than understanding what is.
Oh, okay.
You know, so in terms of infant mental health, we look at, you know, pediatrics. I think that's where it kind of all began. Uh-huh. We don't recognize babies as being people. You know, babies, there's this thing, you know, you feed it, it cries, it poops, and that's it.
And repeat. Then,
wash, rinse, and repeat.
Yep. And they're like the shampoo of humans, we think.
Yeah, and you, rinse, you know, repeat. It's like, oh, let's put pretty clothes on it and take pictures and, you know, this is it. But we don't recognize that, you know, babies, they come here with a full range of emotions.
Yeah.
They think and feel all of the same things that we do. They just don't have language to express it.
Oh my goodness.
So they communicate by, touch. They communicate by crying. And every time a baby cries, it's not necessarily because something is wrong. Mm. That's the only way that they can talk.
Communicating. It's so fascinating. I mean, because when you put it that way and you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when you have more than one child, you can, I mean, I'm sure every mother any parent with more than one child can go, oh, you know, we had baby one and this really worked on making baby one really happy. And then baby two shows up and you would try to repeat that and it's an absolute failure because baby two wants nothing to do with whatever that thing was. And then you're left going, oh my gosh, I thought I was a good parent and it turns out I suck. Yeah. No, it's just a different baby.
Yeah, it's a different baby. Yeah. I mean, they have, every child is different. You know, just like we're all different. We all have different personalities. We all have different things. Some of us are chatty. Some of us are not. Some of us, you know, are very touchy-feely and affectionate and we're huggers. And some of us are like, get away from me. And it's the same thing, literally, with babies. They come like with its emotional download and that's all they know. Yeah. They don't know anything but warmth and love. Mm. That's all that they know. So when they come here into the world, we expect for them to do all of these things that are not age appropriate. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and some things they do have to learn to do, like self-soothing.
Yeah.
But there's a fine line between self-soothing and accommodating neglect.
Mm, okay.
So a lot of times babies, you know, once they learn early on, you know, you condition your kids basically early on. So you teach them either that their needs are going to be met and that you're going to be the one to meet them, or you're not going to be the one that meets their needs. So then that's when you start to have those disorganized attachments where they say, oh, well, yeah, he used to sit in his baby chair, bouncy chair, and he would sit there for hours.
Huh, isn't that fascinating?
And simple things like feeding. a lot of people will prop a bottle up, you know, in a chair or something, and so that the baby can eat while they are still able to move around and do things.
Yeah, and do whatever.
It's crazy. But, you know, when we're looking at our children, you know, they need that connection.
They need those skills.
To be hugged. They need to be told, I love you. They need to know that, okay, my needs are going to be met by mm-hmm. this person. They need to know who their people are, who they can depend on.
So when you're doing those like coachings and the services, when you're working with families and you're literally starting then before baby's even around, establishing and building those relationship patterns so that when baby arrives, then you can kind of coach them through these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talk about, you know, what kind of parents they want to be. I talk to them a lot about what their childhood was like.
Oh, and, yeah, I suppose.
And how their parents were with them.
Yeah,
What did they take away from their parents? What are some things that they love about what their parents did? What are some things that they didn't like? Mm. And how did that make them feel?
I'm understanding the mama coach part now and the mommy mentor label that you gave yourself at the beginning. This is very making sense now.
Yeah, so we talk about that. We talk about, you know, intimate relationships, like how has these things, you know, shown up for you in yeah. your relationship with your partner? Because all of those things impact everything. You know, your parent-child relationships are arguably the strongest relationships that anybody will ever have. Because that's your first point of contact, yeah. especially with women, with mom, because
right.
that's who carried you.
Yeah.
And even to take it a step further, I'm going to get a little deep here.
Oh boy, here we go.
You know, with women, you know, we carry our grandmother's trauma also and her experiences because all of us were conceived in our grandmother's wombs. So you think about women, girls are born with all of the eggs that we will ever have throughout our life.
Oh, I see where you're going.
So we were literally formed in our grandmothers, our maternal grandmothers.
That's kind of mind-blowing when you think about it.
Yeah.
You know?
So intergenerationally, we're all interconnected. And I share that with people because there were some things that, you know, I recognized even about myself.
Yeah.
And some of my own experiences. And learning about different things that my grandmother experienced. My grandmother's ex-husband was abusive, mm-hmm. physically abusive to her. Mm-hmm. And she was abusive to her while she was pregnant with my mom. And my mom, throughout her childhood, would witness some of these abuses mm-hmm. and things like that. So those things impacted me. And so now I'm, you know, I get really tense. It's a trigger point for me when I hear men raise their voice.
Because you've literally been hearing it since before you were even around.
Yeah.
Technically. Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing.
You're
right.
You were. You're going deep. Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing. And that's why I love what I do.
Clearly. Yeah, it's incredible. When it comes to this, the impact that you're seeing, a focus on infant mental health, what impact are you seeing that have just tangibly on families that are you're educating on this, that you're working with on this, what are the results that you're seeing from out of these families?
One of the biggest things that I see.
Big old smile on your face right now. I wish you could see it, you guys.
Is honestly, well, two things.
Okay. Two things.
Okay. So the first thing is that I get to experience other kids. My clients' kids, they call me TT Keisha a lot of times. And so they get really excited when I come around.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hug on them and I love on them and I give them treats. And, you know, sometimes we might field trips.
Yeah.
Things like that. And, you know, I talk to them. I'm on the floor and I'm playing with them and doing different things with them and kind of modeling to mom and whomever else. Like, okay, this is kind of what this should look like and and look at how, you know, the baby's behaving. So that's the number one rewarding thing for me. The second thing is just really being able to notice a difference in the mom.
Yeah.
And having her say, like, you know, we talked about X, Y, and Z, and that really helped me. Mm. Like, that really helped me. And I didn't realize that I was doing, you know, these things with my child, and I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Or I want to do more of this. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And just being able to see more parents and more families take a very hands-on approach to whatever the outcomes of their life are going to be, and especially how it relates to them raising their kids. That's probably the biggest thing, because sometimes I feel like I'm just talking and rambling and they're like, okay, whatever. Okay. You know, I'm doing all of these things, but when I actually see them make a change or make a difference, and then they say, hey, Miss Keisha, you know, you remember when you told me how to do, I did X, Y, and Z. When they come back to me with that, that's like the greatest thing ever. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I think you've got the correct name, Infinite Family Solutions, because based on the list that you were, you know, rattling off at the beginning and then bringing it around to this, I mean, it is aptly named, because honestly, the impact could literally be infinite when you look at, you know, making those changes at this level and then the impact that has on the next generation and the generation after that. It's very accurate in that it is infinite family.
It's, you impact. Know, it's healing is one of those things that is transcendent. You know, things that I've healed in myself, I've been able to have conversations with my mother about.
Yeah.
And I've been able to resolve things that my grandmother experienced and, you know, my great grandparents and things like that. And I really believe that. And it's impacted the way that I parent my daughter.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, I was telling her on the way here that I was so proud of her, because I'm like, you know, you are the me I wish I was at your age. Mm. And she's just like, oh. But, you know, being able to see, you know, okay, all of this hard emotional work that I've been doing with myself and others, like, I get to see, okay, this is, you know, I get to see the outcome of that with her.
Yeah.
I get to have a much deeper relationship and understanding with my own mother. Mm. I've been able to resolve things with my father, even without us speaking. I've been able to resolve those things. And you really can never underestimate the power of healing, because it is something that, you know, you heal forward and you heal backwards. And that's, you know, if we're going to transform society and move up in a way from where we've always been, it's the only way. We've all got to heal. We all have to.
Mm. So in light of that, and acknowledging that we're leaving so much conversation on the table simply because we'd be here for days, which would be wonderful, but ain't nobody gonna listen to a 4-day long podcast.
No.
We touched on bias in the healthcare system a little bit. I'm gonna put this link in the show notes, like I talked about earlier. But there has been legislation that's being pushed through in California that is requiring implicit bias training for healthcare providers who are serving pregnant people. I'm going to put that link in there. I encourage you to read that because that really touches on a lot of the things that we've been talking about. Look into infant mental health, because clearly this is something that I feel like is not talked about enough and that we need to have a better understanding about, because the impact is, as we've talked about, infinite. And as we wrap up this conversation, Keisha, I'm going to ask a rather loaded question, but I feel like it's a great place to end before we kind of move on to something rather lighthearted. So, you know, you've got the mic and you've got people listening. If you could grab those of us with inherent privilege just gently by the shoulders and look us in the eye and get us to just tell us something that we need to understand specifically about maternal and infant health in the Black community in particular. And even if it is wider than that, what would that be?
I would say first and foremost is to listen. Listen without responding or replying, because, you know, those are two different things. but really listen and give consideration to experiences and perspectives that may not be your own, because they're not yours, and because it's not something that you personally identify with, that doesn't make it any less true. So there's that piece. And then the other thing is to take very deep and unapologetic and hard self-inventory. Really look at yourself and how racism is internalized even within you. We all have internalized racism. For me, it may be moving out of the way when I see a white person walking. For you, it may be expecting me to move out of the way when you see, you know, a Black person or another person of color. And it's things, it's little microaggressions, things that we don't necessarily recognize that we're doing. And sometimes that we don't even understand why we're doing. But really, really take a hard look at you. Identify those things that you could maybe do a little bit differently, and challenge the people around you to do the same. You know, it's not enough for us to just do whatever, but then we're sitting at the table with, you know, our racist family members and not calling them out. So yeah, listen, take a self-inventory and be an ally. If it's something that you are against, speak up about it, and speak up about it in your social circles and, you know, at the family dinner and things like that. Because like I said, we all have it. We all have it. It just looks different. You know, one is comes of privilege and one is oppressed.
Thank you. Today is my Milwaukee mom moment. This one, I just giggle when I read it. This is from Mandy R. It says, the church we used to attend had kids' time after the opening song, where the kids and their parents would sit on the floor and listen to a message related to the Bible reading. The song had bongo drums, and the kids were really upset they couldn't play. So my three-year-old turned around and started banging on my chest and yelling, I have my own set of bongos.
That is hilarious. That is funny.
Can you even imagine the look on her poor face? I mean, he's three, and so it's like
he's a breastfed baby.
Had to be. These are mine.
It had to be.
I love it, Mandy. Bless you and your little guy. That's hilarious, and we're good for you. Well done, madam. All right, Keisha, as we wrap things up today, these are just kind of fun little get-to-know-you things, and I would love for you to tell me an unpopular opinion that you hold.
Oh, God, everyone is going to come for me after this. I think pumpkin spice is awful.
Now, is it all pumpkin spice, or is it just like the pumpkin spice latte?
It's really all
it's
things
all
pumpkin.
It's all of it, really.
Pumpkin bread, I think I can tolerate pumpkin
bread. Oh,
yeah, bread.
That is good.
Pumpkin pie, I tried that for the first time a couple years ago.
Yeah.
in my daughter's school, Harvest Fest.
Yeah.
So we all had to bring in like fall foods and things. And they're like, would you mind bringing a pumpkin pie? And I'm like, I'm Black. We don't eat pumpkin pie. I was like, we can do sweet potato pie, but not pumpkin pie. And they were like, you never had pumpkin pie? And I said, no, never. And I tasted it, and it was the most god-awful thing ever. Like, why do you eat this?
This isn't food.
So yeah, I am, I guess, in that very small, insignificant
portion of the population that it's does great. Not like pumpkin spice.
It's great. Hey, your defense for it, it cannot be argued with. That's really funny.
I honestly had never heard of pumpkin pie until you know,
why would you put that in a pie?
Until I was I went to school in Wauwatosa, so my friends would be like, "Oh yeah, we had pumpkin pie," and
really,
who eats pumpkin pie? So
next thing you know, you're gonna have eggplant smoothies. Like, what does
never that's nasty. Never had pumpkin pie in my house? Never.
Oh my goodness, that's really funny. What would you say is your My Milwaukee pick? Now this can be a area of the city or a place you like to go, place you like to eat, literally anything and everything from around the city that you are like just love it.
The lakefront has to be number one.
Yeah.
I love it. We are sitting on the world's largest fresh body of water, and I try to take advantage of it as much as I can, even in the winter months.
Okay.
I'm not an outdoorsy person, but in the winter months, you can probably find me at the lake somewhere.
Doing what in the winter?
Sometimes I just sit.
I was picturing you like out on the lake, and I'm like,
not ice fishing or anything like that. I'm just, you know, on the banks, on the shore, sitting in my car or where I live. I live walking distance to the lake, so in the mornings I may go for a quick run or
that path like that. Along there is Veterans Park is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's my happy place.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, the lakefront. And then is for food, Beans and Barley is one of my favorite restaurants.
Really?
Yes.
Full confession, I haven't been brave enough to go there yet.
Really?
Yeah. I've gone by it so many times, but it's really that good, huh?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, they source a lot of things locally.
Yeah.
Nothing is fried. It's very health conscious. They have a lot of options, vegetarian, vegan options and things. I'm not vegetarian or vegan usually. But
maybe that's why I've been nervous, because I always thought it was just really hyper focused on like vegan.
Nope. Everything is actually made fresh. They really don't have anything processed. So their baked goods come from local bakeries, things like that.
Same thing. You convinced me.
Same thing with Colectivo.
Colectivo. Oh, I love Colectivo.
When we met at Colectivo.
We did.
Yeah, Colectivo. And then really like Third Ward, East Side.
That's like seven things.
I know. That's you said one. I'm not too good with following directions.
It's okay. It's okay. What is in your cart? Now this could be something that you've either like had hanging out in your cart that you just haven't like actually gone through with yet, or something that you purchased recently that you're like, why did I wait so long to get this?
So, right now there's been some fit gear, like, from Fabletics.
Okay.
Sitting in my cart for about a month now.
Oh, that's a long time to be in the cart.
Yeah. I'm trying to convince myself to work out more.
Yeah,
to work out, because I just have completely fallen.
Where do you have time?
I've completely fallen off the wagon. Yeah. And my pants and things are starting not to fit. Well, they don't fit. I've been wearing leggings and things, but I don't want to go to the next size in leggings. So I want to stay where I'm at. Actually, I want to go down a size. So yeah, I'm convincing myself that if I buy some more workout clothes that I would actually go to the gym.
The cute fitness clothes?
Mm-hmm.
They make some really cute ones too.
They do.
They do.
They do.
What is coming up for you in the coming months? Like, I even hesitate to ask. Like, what's new and exciting for you? Because literally everything that you've been saying is so new and exciting, but you've got so many cool things going on. Tell us where people can learn more about you.
Well, right now I am in the middle of a rebrand with Infinite Family Solutions, I'm not changing anything in terms of what I'm offering. I'm just the platform and how I'm going to put it out there is just gonna look a little bit different. The Mommy Mentor is becoming a thing, so be on the look for that.
Love
in 2020. I co-host a radio show with Earl Ingram in the morning.
every first and third Thursday.
Okay.
I'm on air, but it's on News Talk 1510 AM and 92.7 FM. And it's broadcast all over Wisconsin. So I do that on the first and third Thursday mornings from 8 to 9 AM.
Okay.
I have a whole hour where I get to talk about things that I want to talk about. And I have some speaking engagements coming up. You can catch me. I just wrapped up, the Wisconsin Alliance for Infant Mental Health conference last week.
Oh, wow.
So I was a presenter at that conference, and the Poverty and Swim Summit on Poverty and Swim conference. I wrapped that up three weeks ago. So there's that. And then I've got some other things in the pipeline, some conferences. I may or may not be at Planned Parenthood's Safe, Healthy, Strong conference next spring. So
so a few things here and there.
Yeah. I'm being booked at various organizations to come in and speak to their staff about implicit bias and in their organization, mm-hmm. and how that impacts families. So that's something that's available. You can find me on LinkedIn, Keisha Shanks. I'm on Facebook at Infinite Family Solutions, and Keisha.Antoinette on Instagram. Yeah, I think I covered it.
I think you did. Keisha, I want to just say, I don't feel like thank you is enough. So with everything that is going on, with all you have on your plate, the fact that you would give us this amount of time to speak to this is so, so valuable. And I want to thank you sincerely. And
thank you for having me. A lot of times I just feel like it sounds like a lot, but you know, I just run my mouth a lot.
When you've got that much
incredible. I speak from the heart. So.
Yes, you do. And I'm so grateful. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, sorry. That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. For more information on what you just heard, check out the show notes and find us on Instagram at Milwaukee Momcast. If you enjoyed this episode and know someone who should tune in, please share it. Grab a screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories and tag us so we can say thanks. Even better, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes, which helps us more than you realize. We'll look forward to you joining us on our next episode of Milwaukee Momcast.